today, before the budget. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctly Australian and New Zealand perspective. And I'm joined again by Joe Wilkes. Hello, Joe.
Good morning, Martin. You well?
Yeah, pretty good. It was a really cold morning here. 9 degrees centigrade this morning overnight. That's the coldest it's been for a long time. So, not that I'm complaining, really, but
it's quite nice. We're actually going to be allowed to go out and enjoy ourselves a little bit more coming forward. Government yesterday announced that we're switching to level 2 lockdown from Thursday morning. Few restrictions still in place, but you'll be able to travel beyond between regions within New Zealand. You won't yet be allowed to go to the pub, which I'm a bit disappointed about, if I'm honest. I've gone on some long walks over this lockdown, and I don't think I've ever walked past so many pubs, Martin, without being allowed in. We've still got those restrictions for another week or two. Largely businesses will hopefully be returning to normal, and the schools will open up from Monday. Lots to get excited about in terms of, a bit more freedom. We've done a good job on controlling the spread of COVID-19 around New Zealand, and that's allowed us this opportunity. So hopefully that will persist.
Yeah, I published a chart yesterday from the Financial Times that compared Australia and New Zealand, and then I sort of stuck the US and the UK just on the same charts, just to sort of make the comparison. I mean, both Australia and New Zealand are tracking so much better in terms of death rates and in terms of infection rates. So maybe not surprisingly, people are winding back some of those restrictions. But of course, there's a certain nervousness about the second wave and whether people will actually still be sensible or not, or whether they'll go over the top. We've had a few examples here in Australia where people have just basically ignored them. The regulations and rules, and basically just done what they want. And there's a specific concern amongst younger people here whether they'll just give up and just carry on as normal, which of course could then spread, but we won't know for 3 or 4 weeks, so there's always a delay. So interesting times, but at least it's better news than it was a month, 6 weeks ago, I guess.
Indeed. Well, I think we'll be up to pretty much 50 days by the time I come out on Thursday, and that seems like quite a long sentence. It'd be good to get out. I mean, I have, I guess you look at some of the data coming out of Europe, and they talk about the relaxation of the rules in Germany, and how all of a sudden, 3 days on, their reinfection rate's gone from 0.65 to 1.1%. And so I think we all have to be a bit careful. But fundamentally, and you and I know what our views are on the financial impacts of this. It's come at a time that, well, it couldn't have been worse times or better times for the banking sector. I'm not sure.
Well, it's very interesting, again, how a lot of people are blaming the virus for all the problems that we're seeing in the financial system. And, you and I have been talking for several years about the high levels of debt and the implications of that for the banks, but also for individuals and households. And, one of the basic theses we had was that affordability is a real problem. And that's when everything's going swimmingly and everyone's income is continuing to grow, that's not a problem. But we already had flat incomes. We already had very high ratios. And now, of course, we've got effectively an income shock coming over the top. So in a way, the virus has exposed what we already knew to be there, which is the pressure on households and the pressure on debt. And yet we still have the old, we've got to re-simulate the housing sector because that's the biggest lever in town to make things better. So it's very, very interesting. And I gather that on Thursday, I think, in New Zealand, there's going to be some commentary on the budget and what's going to happen. So there's a bit of a statement here today. It was meant to be budget day this week in Australia, but they've cancelled that. So we're just having Frydenberg stand up and make a few words. But basically his thesis is going to be there will be some bounce back in jobs in a staged way, not really any impact in terms of what might happen. Although we did have the statement on monetary policy last Friday, which basically said unemployment up to 10%, and then over the end of next year down to about 7 or 8%. So unemployment double where it was, and then coming back a bit. That's disastrous for households and debt.
Yeah, well, our numbers, I think, will be slow to react, particularly with respect to unemployment. There's so many people currently on furlough schemes, and you know, everybody who's working for government, you know, they've taken reduced incomes, but they're still working. I think that the data that we got last week with the 4.2% unemployment numbers that they're announcing, you know, towards the end of lockdown, but really very much based on first quarter data, we won't see the reality of those numbers until we go through probably June, July, August. And I think that the June quarter stats, normally in New Zealand, because we're so much slower at getting data out than anywhere else in the world. You look at America and they have weekly reporting of numbers, and we seem to get it 10 weeks after the end of a quarter. So how you can actually plan and prepare on economic sentiment, if you're a business owner, if you're running a company, if you're here there to make decisions, it's quite challenging because the data is so slow. But no, I think that we're going to see more stimulus measures. I you know, there is talk about maybe even a doubling of the issuance of treasuries, or sorry, purchase of treasuries are up by the Reserve Bank. They're already up to $33 billion. They're talking about taking that to $60 billion. Some of the things that I find phenomenal, and this is I guess when a whole country's mortgaged itself up to the eyeballs, we have local authorities who they also run on debt, so they don't necessarily fund their expenditure from council rates and what owners of houses in an area pay. And many of these, they've previously had a debt cap or a debt ceiling at 250% of annual income. Believe it or not, we're talking about raising the limits there. So there's suggestions of that being raised to 300%. So, you know, local authorities remortgaging themselves to three times their income is another signal that you know, the debt is required pretty much everywhere to maintain a system that, you know, was shaky before we got here. Anecdotally, well, sorry, in terms of the household debt requirement for increasing the household debt, because that's what keeps us going. And we saw, you know, $25 billion increase over the last 18 months in the amount of household debt that New Zealanders hold. The banks are now lowering rates again. It was led by China Construction Bank and Bank of China, who I suppose growing their mortgage book in New Zealand over the last two or three years, and they seem to be quite sort of prevalent on leading the way in terms of rates. It had been HSBC previously, albeit HSBC very, very small player in the New Zealand mortgage market, and they tend not to have offices and branches around the country as the Australian banks do. But the rates are now below 3%, so you can borrow mortgage money at below 3%. But how will this manifest itself in terms of actual, one, people's desire to take on debt in uncertain times with uncertain incomes, but also the bank's own management of risk? I think that we're starting to see, and I've got it anecdotally confirmed from a few people who are, you know, get in touch with me through LinkedIn and get in touch with me through the channel, about mortgage offers that they thought that they had agreed in principle, now not being honoured. One guy who I spoke to recently, him and his wife, had previously been looking at a combined household income of 7.5% of their household earnings. And they were looking at borrowing between $700,000 and $800,000 to make a purchase with a reasonable deposit, which would have been about 20%. Now, what's happened with respect to his partner's role is a solid role. She's a teacher. No issues there in terms of her lending. But his role, because it's part made up of salary, part made up of bonuses, which have been consistent for two or three years, the banks are now no longer prepared to lend against his bonuses. And in essence, it's chopped just over $250,000 worth of purchasing power off their mortgaging ability. That's one case, and I've spoken to several who, you know, their expectations of what they were previously thinking they could borrow isn't going to be the same in this immediate aftermath of the COVID-19 situation. So I think that how will that display itself? I think you're going to see the pressure probably at the higher end, the 800,000-900,000 and upwards purchases in New Zealand. That's where the borrowing abilities are going to be impacted. I do think that with the movement down in term deposit rates, and also with mortgage money being cheap, there will be a lot of people who are, who will be tempted into taking on debt plus their term deposits to go and get an investment property, even if it's only yielding, you know, 4% and, you know, 1% on the margin of what they're borrowing at. So we're going to see some interesting dynamic plays, and I don't think we'll get a true understanding of how that impacts in markets until we've got probably 4 or 5 months worth of data.
Yeah, and have the banks given capital and interest payment holidays for the mortgage holders if they want them?
Yes, they have done. ANZ, I think we're up to about 30,000 people who switched over to you know, having a holiday of sorts or switching to interest only. You've got to remember, 30% of our market is on interest only anyway. So. Yeah. You know, those, you know, the mortgages that have been written over the last 5 or 6 years, I think it peaked at about 36% of interest-only loans. It did drop down to about 29%, but I'm guessing that will be on the rise. People taking the cash flow break to see themselves through this period. The news on businesses is not fantastic. Yesterday there was an announcement. Sky City, who run casinos over here in New Zealand, you've got Queenstown, one in Christchurch, one in Auckland, I think there might be one in Hamilton as well. They've just let go 700 of their staff. So that's quite a large proportion of their workforce. Now, I don't know. I mean, I know that the pokies are quite popular here in New Zealand. Bizarrely, they're often run by charities, but the gambling side of it is a tourist thing as well. We do get a lot of people coming on holiday, and they do go to those, you know, those types of establishments to, you know, unwind after a long flight. I think when you're getting news like that, you've got to sort of sit back and say, okay, well, these businesses haven't even come out of lockdown yet, and they've made that decision. The tourist sector, you know, we know represents a fairly large proportion of foreign exchange earnings, about 5.5% in terms of directly in, and then another 4.5% of sort of spill-on businesses that support the tourist industry. So. Where do these incomes get affected? What businesses will be there? You know, there've been, you know, a few hundred insolvencies during the crisis, and those are the ones that we know about. I think we'll see some interesting times. I'm going to get out and about and have a little drive around some of the areas as we open up, and just see what's happening there.
Well, I think businesses certainly here are registering significant pain. We had a business confidence survey out yesterday, and it was the worst ever. And interestingly, even if you ask them about longer-term prospects, they're also remaining very negative, which suggests to me that this isn't going to be a V-shaped thing at all. This is going to be a long, slow haul. And we know that quite a lot of businesses here, although they, in theory, were able to get loans from the banks to sort of see them through and get money from the government that they can pass on to their employees, that created a cash flow problem for many. And certainly in my surveys, a lot of small businesses have just said it's too hard, you know, they're going to stop. And the trouble is that it's easy to turn off a business, it's much harder to start it up again. So my expectation is that businesses will definitely be under the hammer for quite some time. And retail, of course, continues to struggle here. We have a lot of closures, we have a lot of vacant shops already. And again, this is part of that trend which was already happening. This isn't created by the virus, it's just amplified by the virus. So in a way, some of those things that were already in train are now just coming through. And interestingly, here in Australia, we've also got the banks tightening the lending standards. I've had a number of people communicate with me saying, I got this pre-approved loan ready to go. I then tried to actually activate it, and then they said, no, we're now reducing the income multiples, and we're not taking account of those particular income flows anymore. And if you're in that particular industry, forget it. So it's much harder for people to get new loans. Interestingly, the Reserve Bank here in their report on Friday said new loans will definitely come off, but there will be growth in existing loans as people essentially have those interest and principal repayment holidays. So they're actually sort of celebrating the fact that the total loan balances will still rise based on those extensions, despite the fact it's not new loans. I think it's nuts. I mean, you know,
it's a classic extend and pretend. Governments are doing it, households are doing it, the banks are doing it, and we know it's because they can't. None of them can see a decline in the size of their loan book, because that immediately puts pressure on them. So it's going to be quite interesting. I mean, that there are. Early signs, I think, that the commercial side of the market is going to be affected. We touched on last week the number of firms that are going and negotiating with the commercial landlords to go and get payment holidays and breaks. Mm. If you look at an area like Christchurch, for example, there's about 2,500 properties listed, and some of them will be duplicates, but just commercial premises listed. In a city with a couple of hundred thousand people, that's quite a lot of commercial space that's empty. And I know that is, some of that is the fallout from the earthquake 10 years ago. And there's been a lot of development, but has it been overdevelopment for the current size of the population? So yeah, we're going to see some interesting change in the dynamic. I mean, I look at the lending multiples and my experience of the GFC in the UK, being in real estate at the time, I sold a house in 2007 before things turned, and I was sat and rented thinking, okay, I think I made the right decision here. And then actually I couldn't go to a bank to borrow the money because of the industry that I was in. Literally no bank would touch me unless I was prepared to pay rates that were 2 or 3% higher than the market rate. Now, there doesn't seem to be that same discerning nature of who we've lent to in Australia and New Zealand over the last few years. Certain industries, everybody seems to be able to get the same rate irregardless of what profession you're in. And I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the bank's going to have to look at who they are lending to and where the impacts might be. The whole change of, being able to borrow 7.5, 8, 9 times household income is not uncommon in New Zealand. A lot of it is on interest-only terms. But that, I look at the UK and we got enthusiastic with a few lenders offering over 6 times in the GFC. But pretty much since then, it's been very difficult to borrow more than 4.5 times a household income. And that's also where general day-to-day living costs are much lower. Prices of commodities, prices of food, energy, power, and the things to keep your house rolling. Where we go from here, I can't see the banks being as enthusiastic as they have been previously. They're making the right noises, but they're also setting up warnings. BNZ have come out this morning. This is the bank that Tony Alexander, my favourite economist, used to work for before he retired, conveniently last year. Now they've publicly gone out to there today and said they're expecting a 12% drop in house prices. Haven't said over what time frame, but talking about a 12% drop, and that from one of the lenders, I think, is quite telling, because they're normally far more robust than that.
Well, of course, if they start then talking about that, they'll have to incorporate that in their risk models, which of course has then a feedback loop within the way that they actually underwrite loans going forward. Otherwise, they will be regarded as irresponsible. And it goes back to our fundamental thesis, right? Credit growth equals house price growth. Credit shrinkage, credit compression equals house price falls. And that's why you and I both believe, I think, that prices are probably more likely to go down rather than up, despite all of the stimulus talk and despite all of the intent of governments to try and encourage new construction, all those things. The fundamental dynamic, I think, has shifted. And, it'll be 6 to 12 months before we really see how much it plays out. But I think we're definitely at a turning point.
Yeah, well, I think that the stimulus is likely to go into the corporate sector. There has been suggestions of helicopter money coming out of level two, giving households $1,500 a man, and a couple of the banks have been sort of lobbying quite hard in the social areas and the news around those suggestions. But I have a feeling that it will be more targeted towards certain too big to fail industries. I think that the construction sector will get a fillip in the budget this week. I think that there will be grants for, whether it's construction of social houses on behalf of the government, the Kiwi Build thing that much vaunted. Not heard a whisper about Kiwi Build for 6 months now. That's conveniently been parked, because when you look at housing shortage, this is the whole narrative that New Zealand's been pumped up on. We've got a housing shortage. No, we don't. We've got 40,000 empty houses, 29,000 empty houses in Auckland alone. You've got another 37,000 Airbnbs. But the reality is really that it's a credit-fueled bubble that has got too big to be maintained, and there aren't enough people to want to maintain it. So Where we go from here is, you know, I think that we will see, you know, that wider governments love building posts that we did last year and talking about that double whammy of credit created for production and then further credit created from a first time buyer buying it at the end of it, and the spillover of jobs. I don't think New Zealand actually has another option.
Yeah, well, of course, narrow based economy, we've got the same here. You know, we've put all our eggs in the construction, property, household spending basket, really. And I think we need a different plan. I just wanted to let know one last thing before we sign off today. You know, we did a post some time ago about watch for the, you know, the selling of those toys, you know. Well, yeah. I can tell you that in the last month, I've noticed an increase in the number of people selling boats and water skis and all those things, right? And the second car. So there's definitely people trying to sell what they've got to make ends meet. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that too.
Yeah, I think those are the immediate cash flow challenges. I mean, your Stats New Zealand last year talked about 50% of New Zealand households having less than $5,000 worth of cash savings. Yeah. And I think it was only 10% had more than $50,000 worth of liquid cash. So that would normally suggest that either people have to go and borrow to fund lifestyle and expenditure, or they have to liquidate something to go and keep the cash coming in. So it's a very, very interesting time. I'm normally a very optimistic person in life generally, but I'm looking at things and just thinking, yeah, I can't see how this magically cures itself.
No, it's going to be tricky, Joe. Well, thanks for your time today. Let's catch up again in a few days once we have a bit more data. I think it's important that we keep talking quite regularly because things are moving very quickly. But I think you and I are both alerting people they should be cautious and careful, and don't go and get a whole bunch of debt at the moment because things are too uncertain.
Well, it depends on whether you're taking on the debt to buy things at 20 cents in the dollar, because there will be a few opportunities out there, and I think that there will be some businesses that will become quite good value, perhaps. Mm-hmm. If we're able to sort of weather this shock, there'll be, you know, I think there will be some opportunities out there.
About picking the winners, isn't it, Joe? Thanks for your time today. Take care,
Martin. Good to see you, mate. All the best.
See you. Take care. Bye.
Bye.